suburbia.
The suburbs. Almost as much written about as Madison Avenue. And just as much in need of reflection. Like Madison Avenue, life in the suburbs has its good moments and others not so good. Discouraged? Disgruntled? Heck no. They're glad to be here.
According to President Trump, however, this idyllic picture of the suburbs from the 1950s is coming to an end. In the past month, the president has repeatedly claimed that an Obama-era affordable housing initiative called Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing, or AFFH, is actively working to destroy the suburbs. Here's President Trump saying this three different times just this month.
The AFFH is a disaster. It's been a disaster. It's ruining the suburbs. It's destroying the suburbs. It's bringing down values of houses, and it's bringing up crime.
Mothers aren't happy about that. Fathers aren't happy about that. They worked hard to buy a house, and now they're going to watch the housing values drop like a rock, and that has happened.
Your home will go down in value, and crime rates will rapidly rise. Joe Biden and his bosses from the radical left want to significantly multiply what they're doing now. And what will be the end result is you will totally destroy the beautiful suburbs. Suburbia will be no longer as we know it.
The president's rhetoric is in line with the legacy of dog whistle political messages that have often been a staple of racist housing policies for decades. According to the Bloomberg City Lab, people of color accounted for the vast majority of suburban growth between 2000 and 2010, and that could mean that appeals to preserve white suburban communities may reflect an outdated vision of what the suburbs really are and could fall flat with voters in November. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's where we start today on The Takeaway. Joining me now is Richard Rothstein, the author of The Color of Law, A Forgotten History of How Our Government Segregated America. Richard, thanks for being with us.
Hello.
Also joining me is Tarini Partee, national politics reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Tarini, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
We're talking a little bit about these messages and how the Trump administration has sort of been using the suburbs as almost a target here for his upcoming to garner support. And I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about how politicians have appealed to suburbanite voters historically. Is this common?
That's right. So what we saw in the 1960s is the Republican Party using this sort of similar message to reach Southern, especially Southern suburban voters. They were targeting white women in the suburbs, using this sort of law and order strategy here to appeal to these types of voters. That's how the Republican Party consolidated the South and suburbs across the country. And led to, you know, Richard Nixon's win. And from then on out, even in congressional races, they started winning the districts in the suburbs. And what we're seeing now is President Trump trying to use that same strategy. But the way he's doing it is sort of more, you know, explicit than and more overt than other Republican candidates have even done. What's different now than what it was, you know, decades ago is that we're seeing suburbs changing, as you mentioned. We're seeing demographic changes all across the country in suburbs. We're seeing rapid population growth in liberal-leaning cities. And then those people are moving into suburbs, diversifying them. And, you know, they don't feel the same way they did about a lot of people living in suburbs don't feel the same way they did about race 40 years ago. We're seeing increased support for, you know, recent protests against racial injustice. So it's definitely a different landscape, but the president is still trying to use that same old, you know, it was called the Southern strategy.
So Richard, the vision that we heard of the suburbs at the top of the show with sort of the birds chirping and the white picket fence and the couples wearing their press shirts, all of that was actually real, right?
Well, the federal government created suburbs for working class families in the mid-20th century. There were always suburbs. But prior to the end of World War II, they were mostly only affluent families who were living in them, single-family homes, separately constructed, not large subdivisions. The subdivisions that ring every American city now were created as whites-only single-family home suburbs in the post-World War II period, primarily, by the federal government. The most famous of these is probably Levittown, east of New York City, 17,000 homes in one place. The developer, William Levitt, could never have developed that suburb on his own. Nobody would lend him the money to build 17,000 homes for which he had no buyers. The only way he could build that development, and this was true of developers all over the country, many of them with suburbs just as large as Levittown, the only way they could build it was by going to the Federal Housing Administration and the Veterans Administration, submitting their plans for the development, the design of the homes, the architecture, the layout of the streets, and a commitment that the federal government required never to sell a home to an African-American. The federal government even required that these developers, like Levitt, place a clause in the deed of every home prohibiting resale to African-Americans or rental to African-Americans. And this was not the action of rogue bureaucrats in the Federal Housing Administration or Veterans Administration. It was written in a federal housing manual called the Underwriting Manual that was distributed to appraisers all over the country, whose job it was to evaluate applications of developers for federal bank guarantees for their loans. The manual
so
said that
this was policy, Richard, is what you're saying. I mean, it wasn't sort of an unwritten rule. These were actually written policies that explicitly said, keep black renters and homeowners out of this community.
Absolutely. The manual said not only could you not rent or sell to an African-American, you couldn't even get a bank guarantee for an all-white development that was going to be located near where African-Americans are living, because in the words of the manual, that would run the risk of infiltration by inharmonious racial groups. So this was a very explicit policy.
Right. And that point right there, the idea of infiltration, the idea that people are coming to infiltrate your community is, I think, one that's directly connected to fear here. Tarini, we're talking a little bit about this messaging from the president, and he's continued. We heard at the top of the show to say, you know, your property values are going to go down. Tarini, you know, when you hear that, is that, and I want to bring to mind a vision, an image that I think a lot of us have seen. There was a couple who, during a Black Lives Matter protest, came to the front of their homes with guns in their hands, and just the look of fear on their face. Tarini, is President Trump's message actually resonating? And when I think about the McCluskeys with their guns on their lawn, pointing them at black and brown protesters, I wonder if that is just where this message is landing.
I think it does resonate with a certain percentage of voters, especially in the suburbs that the president is targeting. But, you know, I was in North Carolina recently in a suburb there that voted overwhelmingly for President Trump. And I spoke to a lot of people, and especially in talking to some women, what I heard was, you know, that their views on race have changed. And, you know, I talked to a 71-year-old woman who said, you know, she's changed a lot over the years, and that type of messaging is no longer resonating with her. But what the president is trying to do is using this current debate over, you know, Confederate monuments, over, you know, the current protests, and using some of the more, you know, violent, the rare cases where we're seeing some violence. He's using that sort of imagery combined with these calls to defund the police to sort of sell that message of fear. You know, we're seeing this new ad that's been running where, you know, someone calls the police and they say it's a voicemail and says, you know, press one for a robbery, or, you know, we can't take your call right now because the police has been defunded. So he's sort of, you know, combining all the things that are going on and layering that with this message of, you know, these protesters, these violent people. You know, he's not explicitly saying, you know, which race they are, but it's pretty clear what he's talking about. And using that sort of fear to target a lot of these suburban voters.
Richard, we've heard the president's appeals at the very top of the show here a couple times this month. He's essentially saying your home values are going to go down. How factual is that? Has low-income housing, has the introduction of people of color and black people, more specifically to suburbia, actually had that effect? I mean, we know, to Tarini's point, that the suburbs, if you will, have become more diverse. I don't know if that means they're more integrated, but do his claims hold any water?
Well, there are a couple of points here. First, let me say that when we say the suburbs are becoming more diverse, that's primarily not with African Americans. We consider communities to be integrated if any minority group comes into it. But African Americans still are primarily very distant from whites and where they live, and vice versa. So far as property values go, historically, property values have increased when African Americans have moved into communities simply because they had so few options. African Americans were willing to pay more for housing than whites were willing to pay for similar housing. So typically, property values went up when African Americans moved in. The only time they went down was when real estate agents and speculators, we call them blockbusters, went into these communities when a few African Americans moved in, initially raising property values, and tried to panic whites into thinking that their property values would fall. The whites then sold their homes to these speculators at reduced prices, making the property values of the community go down. And the speculators turned around and sold them to African Americans at higher than market prices. The Federal Housing Administration was well aware of the research that property values increased when African Americans moved into a community. It ignored this research and propagated the myth that property values would decline if African Americans moved into a neighborhood.
Richard, during the pandemic, we've seen, I mean, there feel like there have been a couple things that have happened demographically with the suburbs. We saw, for example, in the 1970s, I would say, a lot of white flight from cities, white suburbanite or white middle class and upper middle class families moving out of the cities that they thought were decaying at the time and leaving. And then we saw a little bit of a pattern about a decade or two ago, where wealthier whites were moving back to the cities and causing sort of what was known as gentrification. The pandemic has now, I think maybe this is temporary, but I feel like there are lots of folks who said they need to go back to the suburbs to find more space and more room, and if they're going to socially distance. Has that shift meant anything right now, Richard, or is this just a temporary blip because of the pandemic?
Well, I don't think that's a real issue. Most of the people who are gentrifying these neighborhoods are not the families that have been traditionally living in suburbs. These are younger professionals who don't yet have large families and are gentrifying urban areas. The families of two, three children that have always lived in the suburbs are continuing to live there. They're not moving into gentrifying areas. And so I don't think there's any issue of them now wanting to move back. The young people can't afford to move to suburbs. The suburbs are now too expensive for young people, even young professionals, to live in the suburbs where they grew up. So I think that the trends you're talking about of young professionals moving into cities is going to continue. They can't afford to live in suburbs, and families are going to stay in the suburbs.
Tarini, how successful have Republicans been with white suburban voters over time?
They've been very successful. You know, it's been suburban voters have been a key part of the Republican voting bloc, their coalition that they've been able to establish. So, you know, the fact that there's some Republican voters in these suburbs that are questioning whether or not they're going to vote for the president is a big deal, not just for 2020, but in the future. You know, if they get turned off by the Republican Party as a whole, or if it's, you know, it might just not be a frustration with the president, but with down ballot candidates that are sort of repeating what the president says and going along with what he says. If it becomes a frustration with the party as a whole, then we could see this key voting bloc for the Republican Party shift away. And that could make a huge difference, you know, in places like North Carolina, even Georgia, maybe even Texas. So we could see parts of the South and, you know, the Sun Belt with places in Arizona really becoming more competitive and favorable to Democrats.
Richard, President Trump has taken aim at the Fair Housing Act. Could you remind our listeners what that act was intended to do, and what is most concerning to you when you hear the rhetoric from the president that's taking aim at this specific protection?
The Fair Housing Act prohibited ongoing discrimination in housing. It didn't do anything to undo the existing segregation that we had created, that the government had created in the previous decades. There is a provision in the Fair Housing Act that requires communities to assess the extent to which they're segregated and why that happened, and to come up with proposals to redress that. Those proposals never came into effect before the Trump administration took office and repealed, really, the Fair Housing Act requirement that communities make this assessment. So this notion that the affirmatively furthering fair housing provision of the Act has somehow destroyed suburbs is pure fiction. It didn't even come into effect before Trump took office.
And so why, I mean, are there concerns about whether or not the Fair Housing Act, that provision in particular, will just not be, won't have an effect, or that the broader act itself could be at risk?
Well, the broader act won't be at risk. The broader act prohibits ongoing discrimination in the sale and rental of housing. It needs to be better enforced. There have been a number of studies showing that real estate agents still steer African Americans away from white neighborhoods when they sell homes. So it needs much, much better enforcement. The affirmatively furthering provision, which requires communities to take affirmative steps to try to undo the segregation that they've created, that should be reinstituted. And hopefully a new administration will reinstitute such a provision and will try to make some progress in undoing the previous segregation. But the prohibition on ongoing discrimination just needs to be better enforced.
Tarini, you said you've been talking to voters in the suburbs, and I'm just wondering whether or not voters are being, whether or not Joe Biden, who's the presumptive Democratic nominee, has actually addressed this issue at all specifically, or whether any of the Democrats have policies that might have an effect on this voting bloc in particular.
Well, the presumptive nominee, Joe Biden, has definitely been, you know, targeting some of these Republican voters. And the voters I spoke with, I should note, weren't saying that they are ready to vote for Joe Biden yet. They said they won't vote for President Trump, but they're not ready to sort of take that next step at the moment. But they are listening to the policies that that Biden is coming out with. And, you know, we're seeing the president label him as this radical left, kind of trying to portray him as a socialist. And we saw Biden yesterday pushed back and sort of laid out his policies, especially about the economy, something that that a lot of suburban voters do care about and usually, vote on as a top issue. We're seeing him address the economy, especially as it relates to recovery from the coronavirus. So those types of policies, the more he talks about them, could appeal to those types of Republican suburban voters that are, seemingly up for grabs this election.
Tarini Party is a national politics reporter at The Wall Street Journal, and Richard Rothstein is the author of The Color of Law, A Forgotten History of How Our Government Segregated America. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.